And we are live, folks, about 1 minute and 30-odd seconds early, but I want to get things done today. I have a good friend coming over, and I've got a couple things I have to run out and do for the wife today. Pick up a lawnmower that was being worked on by somebody who has more time to work on lawnmowers than I do, and pick up some stuff for the friend that's coming over for dinner tonight. So if I can get an extra minute out of it, I'll take the extra minute. What are we going to talk about today? Well, today's show is actually inspired by a sticking point for me. I'm writing my second Laws of Life book, which, you know, is for now anyway called Laws of Life 2. Not very inventive or imaginative. Maybe we'll call it something else when we get there. It might call it Laws of Life 2. There might be a whole series. It might be a trilogy by the time it's done. But I'm working on a chapter now that I don't even tell you what the chapter is actually really about. But there's a subset in the chapter that breaks down the four types of jobs in my messed up mind, right? Okay, well, there's jobs cleaning up dog shit, and there's jobs, you know, like doing chemistry research to cure cancer. There's way more than four kinds of jobs, but in my view of the world, there isn't. There's actually four, and I'll tell you what they are in a bit. But they're not about what you do, but it's what you do relative to who you are and how you view the job and what the job is doing for you. That's the classification. It's not about, you know, labor versus service or product or sales versus marketing. Like, none of that. It's about things like, do you have a job just because you need a job? We'd call that survival work. Is it the best pay you can get for what you're happy to do or willing to do? Like, it's not like if you're not willing to scrub shitters, then that wouldn't go in the class two category, right? And then there is strategic growth. That's where we look at what the job can teach us. We're going to go deeper into this today. And then we have the class four of job, which is the unicorn job, where you can find yourself something to do for the rest of your life that you would do for free if you didn't need money. And that might sound like a pipe dream, and it can be. It can be. It all depends, right? And how you leverage this, it's not about, like, if you don't have a job that's at least class two or at least class three or at least class four, you're wrong. What do you want? What are you trying to do? Where are you trying to get to? What do you want in your life? Because, you know, if you are in a certain situation where you don't need money, unemployed isn't bad either. It's all about getting what you want in life. That's what lifestyle design is. It's not doing what Jack Spirko says you should do, or somebody else says you should do, or your mommy says you should do, or your daddy, or your kids, or your uncle, your brother, or your father's cousin's uncle's former roommate. It doesn't matter what they think. It matters what you think. The problem is, most of us don't know. We don't really know where we want to go. We don't really know what we're trying to obtain. And sometimes instead of starting with, hey, what do I want to obtain? What is my end goal? Start with the end in mind. Sometimes it's better to examine the process that gets you where you want to go. And then you can be realistic with yourself about what you really want. Because there's a lot of people that what they want is a really good class two job. Which to me is hell. I don't want a class two job. It'll make sense why a person like me would not want one long term when we get there. Because class two job is often a class three job that eventually becomes a class two job after you've sucked all of what you can learn out of it, right? I want to keep being challenged. Maybe you don't. Some people want this in their life. When I'm done working on Friday, 3:30, 4 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock, whatever time it is, I clock out, even if there's no clock, metaphorically, I clock out, and I walk. And, you know, I might get an email that I might answer on a Saturday from my boss if it's reasonable and it's like yes or no, or a phone call, yeah, it's in the file drawer or whatever. But basically, I don't want to hear from work till Monday morning. I don't want to hear from work Tuesday at 6:30 if I left at 5:30. I don't want anything to do with that. I don't want to be responsible for anybody but myself. That's okay. Not what I want. Maybe it's what you want. So first we have to figure out the process to get all the things that are possible, so we don't reject something because we didn't know it was possible. Then we look at the sacrifices, the work it takes to get there, and then we decide with those two things together, what's possible and what I'm willing to do, what will be the thing that will make me the most happy that I'm also willing to acquire. It's a little bit crazy, isn't it? This is the kind of shit like we should have guidance counselors telling kids in high school, and we never will. Now, guidance counselor somebody says, every child should go to college. What college do you want to go to, Bill? What do you want to study, Bill? Maybe Bill wants to be a welder. Maybe Bill wants to be in some profession that doesn't require college. Who knows? But Bill needs to go to college because that's what the little card they give the guidance counselor says. We're not going to do that today. We're not going to take guidance counseling seriously today. We're going to take self-guidance seriously today. So that's what we're going to talk about. This is going to be a hard show for some people, some hard pills to swallow in it. It's going to be difficult for some people, not because you're not willing to do the work, but because you're going to look at where you're at. A person listening to this when they're 25 is going to feel way differently about it than a person listening to it when they're 55. Especially if that 55-year-old didn't get anywhere past where that 25-year-old is at right now. Because they're going to realize, like, this would have been way easier to do all the way back then. And they may take a different approach to it at this point because, you know, you're inside of what you would think of as traditional retirement years. So it all has to do with you, your situation, your wants, your dreams, your hopes, your desires, and your willingness to invest in yourself and your future and how long that future has for you. We're all mortal. If I'm 70, a lot of this I'm going to tune out on. I'm just serious. Like, you don't have to, but I'm probably like, okay, you know, what do I got? Maybe 20 years if I'm lucky. Depends on the health you're in and what you're doing in life and how much you have and how much you have and what you want. But it will vary. It will vary, and it will be an interesting show today. All right. Before we get into that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor today, number one today, is KnifeKits.com. Knife Kits has been a sponsor since 2009. That's 2025. I know 2009 to some of us sounds like yesterday, but it really isn't. That's a long time to be a podcast sponsor. They have all the things you need to make knives, to make sheaths, and to do things like make holsters, whether that's out of leather or Kydex. They even have blue guns if you want to make holsters. Great company. I have literally never had a complaint about Knife Kits. Not one. Not, hey, they screwed up my shipping or whatever. Now, I'm hoping that, you know, maybe there has to be something went wrong, but it's just good customer service. And I always say with my sponsors, like when somebody comes to me, well, I did this and I did it. Did you contact them? Did you give them a chance to fix it before you ratted out to the teacher? Like, but no one's ever ratted them out to the teacher in all the years. I don't know. I can't be certain of this, but I think they're the only company I can say that about, that I've never had a single customer say anything like, hey, can you help me fix this? That says something about this company, KnifeKits.com. And it is, you know, where they do what they say and say what they do. Literally, you can get raw materials and all that, but you can get kits. That it's really easy to make your first knife and then go from there where you want to, including do things like make a knife with your kid or your grandkid or your niece or your nephew. Because it will be something, even if it's not perfect, they will cherish for the rest of their life. I'll tell you something else you might cherish. Really delicious food like what you'll find at Biltong USA. Here's my favorite stuff that you can get from Anton at Biltong USA. Number one, obviously Biltong, specifically the Wagyu Biltong. And I like the stuff a little bit spicy. The Drew War sausages are amazing. The sticks, STIX, it's like hard little pieces of Biltong. Those, I don't like to chew the whole thing, so I like take shears and I cut them into little bite-sized bites. Those are freaking awesome. I haven't gotten any of those in a long time. I probably need to pick some up. But here's the hidden gem. There's a sausage you can get there, a dry sausage. It's not from South Africa like all the rest of this stuff. It's more like a Middle Eastern Turkish thing. It's called kalmanazi. Oh, my, those things are amazing. They're a fermented sausage that's closer to more of what Americans think of as sausage than a Drewor. Check these things out. Check it all out. And remember, if you're an MSB member, you also get a discount from everything at BiltongUSA.com. And one more thing about those, Anton and the stuff he has. Check out some of his other stuff, like some of the seasonings, like the smoked salt, the smoked paprika and all. Really, really awesome. All right, with that, let's get into this kind of like basic concept of breaking it down to just four jobs. And you guys know me. I am big on simplifying things. Like when you look at something and there's a category, like you say, there's 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 categories in here. I still want to break it down to 2 or 3 or 5, something like that, you know? And most things can be broken down that way. Here's an example. What can you sell? What is sellable? We have physical products and non-physical products. That's it. Even services are just non-physical products. That's it. That's all you have. You have physical and non-physical. either it's something that has to be delivered, shipped, put together, whatever, or it's something that can be delivered digitally. Or it can be delivered in that I did a thing for you and I go away and I didn't actually give you anything. Or it can be a product service combined business, like I came to your house and built you a deck. The product is the physical product, the deck, and the service was doing the work. That's it. And every product will fit one of those two things. Either I can send it to you electronically, or I can come to your house and do it for you, even though I don't leave anything behind, like fixing your electrical wiring. If I don't have to give you any parts with it, I just have to go in and fix something, then it's just a service. It's non-physical. Or Harry Beckwith has a great book on the concept. It's called Selling the Invisible. Meaning you're selling something that the person never actually touches. Even if there's a physical representation of it, it's not real. Like a life insurance policy. When you get a life insurance policy, they send you a policy. That's for you to read and cover, make the lawyers happy. Everything's in a computer. You don't need that. If your loved one kicks off or if you kick off and your loved ones need the money, it's all in the system. It's the invisible. It's a non-thing. Right? So jobs, can we break down jobs that way? Yeah. And basically, I'm going to give you the very high level and then we'll dig into these one by one. But survival work. That's, I need a job and these people will give me a job. I don't want the job. I don't like the job. I'm immediately looking for another job. You know, it's waiting tables at Denny's. It's cleaning shitters at a hotel or any other thing you might deem as shit work or any job you'd rather not have. In fact, somebody else might consider it a class two job. Yeah. But you personally, to you, it is work you don't want to do, but you'll do it because you need money and you can get a yes from the person hiring you. Right. Have jobs like that. Packing boxes in a warehouse for me was a class one job. I didn't want to do it. Working as a security person in a bar, i.e. a bouncer, was class one, but I didn't mind it. But it wasn't anything I wanted for my future. Right. Class two is like the best pay for what you'll do reasonably happy. And usually it's anything better than the class one job you currently have for a lot of people. And it means a lot of times a class two job can revert to a class one after the excitement and exuberance and what you thought it was going to be turns out to be wah-wah, right? But class two generally is something that you would look at and say, I can do this, and I can do this and be relatively happy. And as long as it pays enough to cover all my expenses and save some money, I'm happy to have this job. I'm grateful for this job. It's not shit work. Yeah. Class three is a strategic growth job, meaning that when you move from a class two type of job into a class three, you're taking it as much for what it will teach you as for what it pays. Maybe even more for what it'll teach you. Sometimes you move from a class two job, right, into a class three job and you get a pay raise. Sometimes you move from a class two into a class three and you have to take a pay cut just so you can learn something new because it's so far outside of what you already know that the person hiring you, even though they're sold on you as a person, they know that you're taking a step back, like you're taking a sideways step and now you're going to have to learn new things. Yeah. This would be when I went from sales into internet marketing. Took a six-figure, almost a six, it was $94,000 a year I took a pay cut. I only had to do it for a year, but I had to do it to be able to make the crossover. It had to happen for it to work. And then you have a class four job. You'd do it for free, right? If you those four jobs, you would do it for free, but you're going to take the damn money because you got to pay bills, right? Like it's like the kind of job, like if somebody said, here is $10 million. Now you need something to do. You would do that job anyway. Maybe you wouldn't do it exactly the way you have to have it as a job or a business, but bait like 80, 90% of what you're doing, you don't, not only do you not mind doing it, you actually enjoy it. It's like, I got to do something, you know, for 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 hours. I got to do something. And this is something that I would do even if I didn't get paid to do it. That's the four classes of jobs, right? And of course, you know what everybody wants, the last one. We'll get into it, but it's really hard to find. It's really hard for the employer and the employee that will both fit that key together to find each other. And it almost always, like 90%+ of the time, requires you creating your own business. And it's never a class four when you start. A lot of times when you create a business from nothing, you revert all the way back to a class one at first because you are everything from CEO to the janitor and the chief bottle washer. None of these are good or bad, but some serve your long-term goals better. And some are necessary in the short term to serve the long term. We're going to get that deep into that when we talk about the survival job, the first level of job, the lowest level of job. And a place that I think we often fail, Gen X, or no, I'm sorry, we not Gen X fails Gen Z, I think. And I think we did a pretty good of failing millennials with this too, in that we don't explain why they should take whatever job they can get at all. And I'm hoping that we'll get that done today. And it's not just because you need money and you don't need to be a deadbeat, right? You need to go do something, get some money. Like, that should be enough motivation, but people don't think that way anymore. There's a lot more to those shit jobs than just the paycheck, if you make it happen. We're going to talk about that. And the other thing you have to do is understand that you can move between jobs or stack them. There were times when I felt like I was definitely in a class two, maybe like if there was levels like class two A, B, and C, with C being like borderline shit work, and a class two A being, I really like having the job. Otherwise, like a class two A job, but I still needed more money. So I was maybe doing a class two C or a class one job at the same time. Like when I was doing optical networking for Lockheed and I was building as a side hustle, I was working for a guy that built private cable TV installations. But it was also a three. At the same time, it was like a one because I didn't really want to work those extra hours. I didn't make any overtime doing it. I didn't get paid really great for it. And I was already working a full-time job. And then you're adding this. That makes it feel class one. But I was learning shit that the job I had would never teach me. And that led to a lot of other opportunities in life. So there's a place where they blend and cross over. We're going to dig into that too. And it's also important to know where you are. Know where you are, know how you got there, so you, and then figure out where you want to go so you know what to do next. I've talked about this before, but it's kind of like if you don't know where you came from and where you're at, you can't make a map of where you want to go. I could give you an atlas, right? I can give you an atlas. And then let's say I have you blindfolded voluntarily. This is an experiment. You're willing to participate in it. I'm going to drop you off somewhere. I'm going to give you an atlas. And your job is to get to Dallas, Texas, downtown Dallas, the IM Pei building, big blue building with the slots on the side, right? IM Pei was an architect, if you don't know what I'm talking about. But there's a building, they refer to it as the IM Pei building because he was the architect that built it right in downtown Dallas, very iconic with these beautiful glass slits in the side of the building. That's your job to get there. Well, and you have a car. And you have a gas card. And you have enough money to feed yourself for a week. Easy, right? Okay, I'm going to drop you off in Philadelphia, but I'm not going to tell you that's where you are. Now, this is still really a doable task because you start driving around or ask somebody, hey, where am I? Figure out what highway you're on, what road you're on, and then you can figure out where you are, and then you can plot it. You have to figure out where you are. And so if I drop you off in the middle of a field in Kansas, it's going to be more difficult to figure out where you are, especially if you don't know where you've been. So we're going to talk about that today, too. And this is about lifestyle design, not career ladder bullshit. This isn't about how to get the director's position at your office. It could be, but only if that's what you really want. And if that's what you really want, you need to be clear about why you want it. Because inevitably, and I've had this experience in my life, you look at somebody and say, man, they got made. Like your boss. If I could move into their position, I'd have it made. And then either they move and you actually get their job or you go somewhere else and you don't even just get a job at their level. You get a job above their level and you're like, after a couple of weeks, you're like, this kind of sucks because the grass is always greener indeed. So if you're trying to obtain a higher amount of pay in your company, you need to determine, is that really what you want? Or are you chasing money because you think money will give you what you want? On some levels, it can. I do not hate money, and I do not advise that anybody else live their life in a way that shows they hate money either, even though so many people do. But yeah, you need to make sure where you're trying to get to is where you really want to be, because you get one life, and some of this stuff takes years of work to get to, and then you get to it and go, well, this isn't what I really want. Now, if that happens, the best thing to do is cut bait right away and say, okay, I'm going to plan a new path. But it'd be better if those years were spent getting where you really wanted to be. Yeah. All right. So let's start digging into the four classes. Class one, survival work. Again, this is you need money, period. Right? Like, when I first got to Texas, I was staying with a roommate, and he was a guy I knew from the Army. His name was Brad. And he said, come live in my apartment with me. You can take the couch to sleep on until you figure out what else, you know, maybe we get another apartment together, whatever, but I want half the rent. And he was even a reasonable guy. He's like, move in first month, don't even worry about it. But starting the next month, first of the month, I want half the rent, I want half the electric bill. Right? And basically, don't even worry about anything else because we all buy our own food and share and shit. But he wanted half the month rent and half the electric bill. I'm like, that's fine. You want half the cable? He's like, I don't have cable. I'm like, okay, neither do I. So we don't have to worry about that. Right? And I took what I could find. I busted tires down at a Firestone. I took a job again as a bouncer in a bar. And that happened because I helped out a bartender when a guy was being really obnoxious and frankly trying to hurt him. And the owner happened to be there. It was midweek. He's like, you know, we have guys to do this during the weekend, but shit like this occurs. Are you interested? Yeah, sure, I'm interested, right? I didn't really want that job either. But I got to hang out in a bar and I got paid and I got a couple free drinks at the end of the night and I met people. That's an important part we'll get to in a second, right? But I did those jobs because I needed work. I took a job for a while during this period of time. I was packing boxes in a warehouse, $6 an hour. Seriously. You know? And you say, Jack Spirko? Yes, because Jack Spirko, when he was 21 years old, didn't have the skill set that Jack has in his 50s or his 30s or in his mid-20s. He just didn't have it yet. I didn't have it yet. So that's what was available. So I took those jobs. But my goal with taking those jobs was beyond just being an entry point, because this is an entry point for most people. It was also the bar led to connections, which led to friends, and friends led to another opportunity, and that's what led me into telecommunications. That's how I got my first job in cabling. Right? So there was an angle on that. It was also get paid. You got to have some money. You got to be able to pay your roommate. And eventually got a two-bedroom apartment with another roommate, and then we split our expenses that way. And most of that time, even when I moved into telecom, was still really like it was class one and class three blended. It really wasn't any class two because it's not where I wanted to be long term. It did not pay enough. Even when I broke into more of a profession, it was only a learning experience to move somewhere else later on. It also builds discipline and makes you more employable, though. This is something it's difficult for people to understand, especially if you've never sat on the other side of the interview desk where you're interviewing the person for a job. I'm interviewing you for a job, right? And the job is a decent job. It's at least a good, solid, middle-of-the-road class two job. And I say, and what are you doing right now? And you say, I'm unemployed right now. Okay. This may be wrong, but your stock value just went down for me, right? Well, when was your last job? This is where it gets really bad. Oh, I've not really had a job. Maybe I had a part-time job or something in my teens, but I just spent my last 4 years in college and I went to school full-time, and so I didn't have a job. Really? When'd you graduate? 2 months ago. You still don't have a job? No. If I have anybody else that can answer those questions better than you, and you're roughly the same qualifications as far as your education, I'm hiring the other guy. Right? Also, let's say I want to hire you. When you have a job, I have to compete. I don't know what you're making. I have to compete again. Now, they always ask you what you're making, and I never would advise you to tell them unless you had to. Right? I mean, because that's really irrelevant. It's better they don't know, because then they're thinking, well, this person has something already, so if I want them to come work for me, right? So when you have a job, period, it shows that you are willing to work, willing to put in effort. You could show up on time. You could not get in fights and go to jail over a workplace disagreement, right? Like, it just makes you have more cachet, right? You have more value to the prospective employer because you're doing something, anything. So if you find yourself unemployed, if you have a really decent amount of unemployment coming in, I understand you don't want to break that. But otherwise, like, any job is better than no job when you're looking for a job, right? It also gets you in the game and out of the house. Like, you're out there. Like I said, my intentions in taking jobs that were shit jobs initially wasn't like, I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to find, like, I knew I would never advance by being a bouncer in a country redneck bar. I mean, the best job there would have been maybe the bartender, did pretty good, you know, on weekends with the money, but then they're working until 2 o'clock in the morning every weekend night. That's Friday and Saturday. That's when I wanted to go out. I was young. I want to go out and hang out with my friends, not work that time of night. Being a bouncer was just more like kind of blending in with the crowd, and I was more willing to do that. But be the manager of the place or whatever, that's not what I wanted. So when I took that job, it wasn't about the money, because it didn't pay that good. It paid cash money, and I made like $50 a night and a couple free beers, right? It was just, it gave me something to do. It gave me a way to be in a place with a lot of people, be known as an employee, talk to people, and make connections. Because it turns out that people that go out to bars and hang out, especially like during the week, like Thursday night or whatever, and play darts, most of those people have jobs. People have jobs, work for companies. Companies hire other people. So I laid all this out on X. And I tried to be really understanding, I guess would be the words, of like the Gen Z bullshit. And say, you know, maybe it's our fault. Maybe it's boomers and Xers who haven't really explained what we mean when we say you should take whatever job you can find. A lot of it is for that. So I laid out all these different shitty jobs I had when I was starting out. And they said, yeah, but he had opportunities because he had all those jobs he could take. Like somebody was just like throwing fucking applications in the window of my car when I was driving down the road or something. I had to go find that shit. And most of these people saying that, making excuses, they would have took any of those fucking jobs. Right now, you can go get a job doing what I did, working in a warehouse in Carrollton, Texas. I went to work. It was just barely getting light out, and it was dark out by the time I went home. No air conditioning. In the summer, it was 120 degrees, working like a madman, nonstop, all day long. And today, let's say that job paid $15 an hour, inflation adjusted. None of those fucking people complaining about it would fucking do it. But yet, it paid the bills, and it made me, when I was telling people at the bar where I was working security, hey, look, I'm looking for something else to do. I'm looking for someone hiring. I'm looking to further my career. And they said, well, what are you doing now other than hanging out in the bar and being about? Oh, I have a full-time job. Immediately, your stock value went up. Wait a minute. Wait, this dude works 40 hours a week. No, wait, he works 50 hours a week. He works overtime. And that's not enough for him. He wants more. Of course I'll introduce him to my friend because it's not going to bite me in the ass. And that is the real purpose of a Class 1 job. If you are going to take Class 1 jobs, then you need to make something out of it. You need to work harder, do more, and talk to people. Talk to your customers. Right. Be careful talking to your customers. Let's say you're a junk removal specialist, right? Like somebody hires you to go around and pick junk up, throw them in a truck, take it to the dump. It's not a terrible way to live. You can make a decent amount of money. It's probably not what you want to do for the rest of your life unless you want to like own the company. But you don't want to be like, hey, I'm looking for another job. But you, hey, how you doing? My name's Jack, blah, blah, blah. Just have a conversation. Things happen when you have those conversations. A lot of times they'll ask you and then it's okay. Well, how'd you get into this? Well, I needed a job and it pays decent and I try to do a good job for everybody and what have you. But I actually hope to do something else. And when they start saying, well, what can you, do you know who's looking to hire? Every fucking person that owns a company that has employees. They're always looking for good people to hire. It's hard. That's why there's literally bounty programs where if you work for a company, you refer somebody and they hire them, they give you money, right? I mean, it's hard to find good help. I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. And so then your next class is the best pay for what you'll do that you don't find really objectionable. So when I stopped, you know, packing boxes and got my first job in cabling was a contractor through a company called Aerotech for MCI. He was a long distance carrier at the time. I had to travel. That sucked, but it was exciting. I'm learning new things. I have a technical skill set now. I'm meeting a lot of new people and I'm building a resume. right? And I like the work. Even if I didn't like having to get in my truck every week and drive 500 miles to New Orleans one week and then to San Antonio the next week, and then San Antonio, I thought I was going home, but then a call comes in, and Thursday we're wrapping up in San Antonio, and I'm driving to El Paso, and I'm there for 3 weeks before I get home. I didn't like that part of it. I still, you know, it was a big upgrade to be in an air-conditioned central office, installing things like DAX and broadband DAXs and things like that, and running cable and doing wire wrapping and learning technical skill sets. Like, that had a much better appeal to me, and it paid reasonably well, about $15 an hour, which for the time was pretty decent. Like, you're not going to do great on $15 an hour today, but in, you know, this is like 1994, 95, in that range. $15 an hour with a lot of overtime and with per diem, it was a big upgrade. It was a big upgrade. So that would be an example of a class two job. And then that eventually led to a job that paid about the same without the per diem, without the travel, in a different aspect of the same telecommunications world. That's how I ended up contracting Lockheed, right? The same place to go to every day. And so these are comfortable, but the problem is they often will stall your growth very quickly. So you need to make them as educational as possible. You need to wring them out, learn everything you can. You need and use them to prove yourself valuable beyond what you're being asked to do. Develop your own metrics. Develop your own goals. Keep track of them. Document them. Because whether or not your company appreciates them or not, they damn as well, damn well sure go on your resume or CV for your next job. You did it. It doesn't matter if you were paid to do it. In fact, it's better that you did it even though you weren't paid to do it. And it can be done in anything. Here's an example. When I was contracting for Lockheed, I started saying, how can I be more efficient? And we were using connectors from a company called Siemens. And you put the fiber through with this gel that was UV cured, and you put it in a UV light thing, and then it cured that, and then you cut it with a diamond tool, and then you pulled it off, and then you polished it. And I got really good and really fast at it. I'm like, can I be more efficient? So I found a competitor that made a connector that didn't use UV. It used an epoxy. No time waiting for it to cure in the light. By the time you put all the connectors on, the first one was done. 24-strand cable. By the time you put the 24th one on, you could start, and you didn't have to cut it with a tool. It was had a little ferrule. You snapped it off, and the ferrule kept it from fracturing. And then you polished it a little bit differently, and it was much faster to polish. All in, when I tried them, I got some samples sent to me. I could get a job done about 25% faster. Now, I was going to work the same amount of hours every week on that contract anyway, so it wasn't a direct savings for the customer, because all it meant was I would finish the entire project quicker, which they didn't really see that much value in. However, the cost per connector for material was 60% less. And it was a 20,000 strand, 40,000 connector network. It ended up saving about $300,000. The company that employed me as a contractor didn't give a fuck because they didn't make any money off materials anyway, but the customer cared. And the customer's recommendation back to my company got me a raise, but it also went into my portfolio for my next job, which, of course, the customer didn't realize they were actually making me more marketable when they did it. Right? But that's technical, and it's money. And blah, blah, blah. Okay, what about a simple job? Had a family member. She took a job in medical billing coding. She had her first week. I talked to her, and I said, so how do they judge your performance? They're like, as long as we get enough work done every day, they leave us alone. Okay. So who do you work for? I work for this girl and she blah, blah, blah. Like, does she review your performance with you or anything? No. What's your pathway to raise? Well, when I took the job, they told me if I do a really good job, they can talk about a raise in 90 days. I'm like, let me tell you what they tell you in 90 days. I wish I could give you a raise, but I can't because there's no money available for raises right now. While they're hiring people, paying them more coming in the door than you're making. That's what's going to happen. And it did. I said, if you want to make the most out of this, you need to develop your own method of tracking your own metrics. Fire up Excel and figure out things like how long you work on a claim, your accuracy rate. I don't know your job, so you have to figure this out. Come up with at least 5 criteria, 10 is better, to rank yourself on your performance form a baseline and then start working on improving your own metrics. Build a spreadsheet, it showed her how to do it, tabs for every week, then bigger tabs for each month, and then tabs for each quarter. Do this for 6 months and walk in with that and say, I've been tracking my metrics. I'm entitled to a raise because this is how much I've performed above where I started out. You've been happy with me the entire time. Therefore, this must be improvement, and we need to talk about a raise. The other thing you could do with that is say, when there's an opportunity to move up into a management level, this is how I've been tracking my performance. This is how I'll be tracking the performance of my team. And no one here is doing it. And I thought that was a mistake, so I did it. This person responded, but I don't get paid to do that, and I let it go. Never said another word about it, and there was no point to it after that. In almost anything you do, you can develop some form of metrics tracking that your boss probably isn't using to evaluate you and other people at your level that they should be. You should do that so you know where you're at. When you ask for more money, you know where that's at. And when you go talk to the next company and they say, well, what have you done to improve while you're there? And what do you bring to us here? And I guarantee you the average hiring manager is going to look at that and go, holy shit, because no one fucking does it. That's differentiation. That's how you make a class two job, effectively a class three job, by doing it yourself, by designing it into it. The problem is, and when we get to class three, you'll understand, most class two jobs start out at least at some level as a class three. But once you've milked it for all you can learn and all you can earn, and your next promotion's years out, and there is nothing new to learn, it reverts to a class two. You'd be mindful of that, because that's when you need to start really looking at other horizons. Because what is there for you now? Unless you're just happy, because you can be at any level here and be happy if it's what you want. But what most people do is they bitch about, I don't get paid enough. I don't get enough credit. I don't have enough opportunity. My job's not challenging enough. Blah, 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 blah. What are you doing about it? Bitching is the only answer they really have. They might even hem and haw and talk around it, but the only real answer they have is, I'm bitching about it to you. And I don't want you to give me a solution. I want you to pat me on the head and tell me I'm right. Well, if you come to me, I know I look like Santa now and all, but that's not what you get from me. If you're 6 years old, I'm Santa Jack, right? If you are 16 years old, I'm a little bit soft, but I'm still pretty hard. If you're 26, I'm the same asshole I've always been, beard or not, just to be completely clear on that. Most people settle here and get bitter. That's what I just described. That's what happens. Like, they settle in, and they're waiting for the next promotion. The next promotion effectively will very briefly turn the existing class two job into a class three job, and it will revert back. Once again, you'll learn everything you're good at. You'll be good at what you do. And you'll also get to a point where when you're in that sort of an environment with an organization large enough for that kind of upward mobility to exist, you start to realize that if I didn't come to work, it wouldn't really matter. And because of that, you become unmotivated. Right? You realize like they would just take somebody, even if what I do is important, there's 100 people here that could do this. If I die tomorrow, they'll replace me before the week's over and no one will really notice. Half of these people don't even know my name, right? Makes me think of the episode of Friends where the guy was going to kill himself and he's sitting there on the phone telling Phoebe he's going to kill himself and no one around him is even paying attention or knows what his name is. Like you start to feel, hopefully not that bad, but you start to feel that way. But it's comfortable, and if it pays all the bills, you don't want to rock the boat. Again, if you understand your choice, that's fine. Then try to figure out some way to have joy in the job. Make a list of everything you love about the job. And every time you're upset, read that list. And when it doesn't work anymore, then reconsider doing something new, right? It's also useful to fund big moves or form a stable footing, but it can be a trap instead. You start making good money, whatever that is for you, and then you get a house and a car with a house payment and a car payment. And then you get some other things in your life. And then you go get a shiny credit card and you buy a few things. And then you have your bills and you can service your bills. But taking even a 10% pay cut puts you on the edge of bankruptcy. And you're comfortably stuck and mired. Because now, moving to a different job that long-term could actually pay a lot better, but short-term pays less is not possible. Deciding, it's not that I hate my job. I don't like where I live. I want to move. Now you're limited, like now you're so typecast in that job. You want to move somewhere where there's not the kind of companies, even if there are job opportunities. Now it's going to be a lot harder because it's difficult to make that move at that point. So the biggest thing you need to do with a class two job, whether it's A, B, or C, like in the mid grades, right, is to make sure that if it's paying you a surplus income, like it is fulfilling that, you've really got a decent income, that a significant portion of it is not allocated to expenses. That's good anyway, but maybe even more so early on in your 20s. It is very easy to get a job at 22 to 24 years of age that pays really good. I'm not saying getting the job's easy, but it's easy for if you get the job that pays really good, that by the time you're 30, you're like, fuck, I can't leave. I can't quit. I got a wife now. I got a kid. Got bills. Freaking kid's going to start playing Little League. I got to buy him a bat, right? It's easy to get yourself in that trap unless you consciously prevent it from happening. That brings us to the third class of job. I call this strategic growth. And strategic growth means you've chosen the job to learn, not just earn, right? And this is in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki's book, the first one, right? Before he just started printing books like printing money because it worked for him, right? There's a point in the book where Rich Dad tells Robert, never take a job for what it pays you. Take it for what it can teach you. Now, that doesn't mean if you have two jobs that can both teach you really well, and maybe they're a little bit different than what they teach you, and both of them are valuable, and one pays like twice as much as the other, ignore the salary. It doesn't mean that. What it means is the primary driver and motivation of moving into a class three job is similar to the motivation people have, at least in their head, even if it doesn't work out this way, of going to college. Think about going to college, especially for a real degree in something concrete that actually can aid your career. People want that education so much, they'll pay the college $20,000 a year or more to go to college. 4 years, $80,000. But those same people, once they're out of college or still trying to figure out how to get into college, won't take a job that will teach them more that will pay them $40,000 a year. They'd rather pay a college $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a year than be paid $40,000 a year because that's a low wage today, right? Yeah. Especially for your young Gen Zs that have been, you know, raised on a life of TV and influencers and think that everything is supposed to be easy in life, right? They don't get that, like, the value in that, the bargain that really is. And again, almost all jobs are class three to a level. When you are nobody and you've never had a job in your life, like I was at one time, right, when I was a teenager, and you find out, hey, you can make $12 an hour. This is the 80s for a teenage kid in high school. You can make $12 an hour to work seasonally for about a month before Thanksgiving all the way up to just before Christmas. That 2 months you can work and you can get hours after school at a turkey farm. And you know you're going to do the shittiest shit work that there is. And this is a real place. It's called Cox Turkey Farm, and I work there. And when I was 16 years old, I had a job. I would go in after school and did whatever they asked me to do. But the real reason they hired us is cleanup on the kill floor. So the guys that worked on the kill floor that did all the processing, they made good money for the place and the time, really good money. And that meant when they were working overtime, they made really good money. So day to day, throughout the year, as they're processing birds, at the end of the day, everybody cleaned up their own station and had to be immaculate. Okay? You don't want to pay a guy time and a half that's already making a really good wage for the place to scrub a sink. So when they worked really late, what they would have is some half-ass cleanup. So we didn't get all the muck. But then we had to go in and clean it perfect. So they could go home because it made more sense to pay a kid to go in there and do that, then pay a high wage to somebody who was already making a decent wage to do the thing he was supposed to do. In other words, these guys would normally take about 30 minutes to clean their station, but now they're getting paid a lot more to do that, and they're already working late, and you didn't want to lose them, right? They love that overtime, but they also wanted to go the hell home at the end of the day. Okay, that's a class one job, right? Washing turkey heads and guts down a concrete chute till 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night when you're a 16-year-old kid. That's a class one job. But I still learned things. Now, in a couple, 3 weeks, you learned everything you could learn. So it only stayed at class three for a very short time. But it's up to you what you turn any opportunity into with class three. All right? Sometimes it comes with a raise. Sometimes it comes with a pay cut. When I used to work for a company for a while called Garrett.com. They were in the Ethernet hardware business, and I was a regional manager. I managed one person, me and my distribution channel. That was it, right? Basically, I was a single lone gun sales guy in a technical space, and I was happy for the job. It was a solid class two job. It stayed class three for about a month. About a month into it, I knew that job cold. I could do it in my sleep. I worked from home. I only had to go to the main office a couple times a year. As long as I made my numbers, they left me alone. It was easy to get comfortable with. Okay? But I wanted more. And this is when I had a personal recruiter for a while that came into my life, and he said, hey, I have an opportunity. Are you interested in it? We started talking about it, and I took the job that I ended up with Fluke on. That was a big pay raise. My income went up about 45% when I took that job. But I also moved deep into class three, strategic growth. Now I was working with direct calculations off of cost of goods sold, calculating average revenue per user, learning about point of sale, true distribution channel management, managing 37 people. This job took me about a year to get really good at. It took me about a year to really learn all I could learn from it. And then it reverted to like a class 2A plus, right? Like still learning a little bit, but the only thing I was doing is adding years on the resume to how long I had the job. I wasn't going to learn anything else, and I wasn't going to get promoted, and it wasn't going to happen. And eventually that's where I moved into marketing, and I took a huge pay cut, right? So one of those moves gave me more money and one gave me less money, but both were solid class three. When I moved into marketing, I ended up moving into a position where I actually had people working for me, but I didn't get paid that well. And they used the fact that I had no agency experience with marketing in spite of the fact that I had done all this. Now, that's what I did with this class 2A job, right? I learned internet marketing really, really well. Really well. I started using it to put people in seats at all the seminars and stuff that we did that generated leads for us. Outside of the company, I told the company what I wanted to do. They said, fuck off. I just went and did it anyway. Like, they're not going to get mad that more people actually ended up on their site and registered for the class. They don't need to know how they're coming in. So I got good at it that way. And I started selling things like phone service and cell phones and other technical things and T1 data sets and stuff like that with websites. So I had all this experience, and I was able to go in and show them all this experience. And I was able to tear their site apart and tell them everything they were doing wrong. And I was able to just blow them away, but they were still able to hold back with, hey, you've never worked for an agency before. This is different. This is how much we can pay you. Fine, I'll take the pay cut. Did that for a year, went to another company. Both of them were moves up long term, but one was a financial move down, one was a financial move up. It can be either one. And it all depends on what is most important to you at the time and what you're bringing to the table. New skills equal new opportunities equals new leverage. That's really what it's about. The class three job. The class three job is stepping outside of your comfort zone, adapting quickly, and adding to what you can do when you're looking for your next opportunity, whether it's in that same company to move up or whether you're moving over to move up. And I say all the time, the days of 30 years in a gold watch are dead to everybody except the person that thinks that they have a job like that. Your employer doesn't think that way. They're not like, gee, Erin works for us. She's great. I can't wait until 42 when we give her gold watch. That's gone. Don't pretend that it still exists. The company you work for, the day you are not useful to them, they will fire you. Now, if you work for a small family-owned business or something like that, and people really know you and all, to a degree, there is some loyalty there beyond the financials. But I'll tell you a secret. Most of the time, when ownership or management makes their own sacrifices to keep people, and I did this, at one point when I was working with Neil, we had a startup, we were getting off the ground, and we needed a bridge about 3 months into it. And he wanted me to fire somebody. And the most I could have saved by firing one of those guys was about $20,000 over the period we needed the bridge. I just took it out of my own salary. Now, did I do that because I loved my people? A little bit. But I did it because I had a good team. And I knew we'd make it. And I didn't want to lose any of them. And I was willing to sacrifice in the short term so I didn't have to go try to get them back or replace them 3 or 4 months later. It wasn't out of the kindness of my heart, though they sure, like my team really loved that. They knew I did it for them. They worked harder. They tried harder. They did more. But I didn't do it because I loved them. And if one of them had been somebody I wanted to get rid of anyway, boy, howdy, would I have taken the opportunity to get rid of them. Hey, Danny, you're out of here, right? But I didn't have somebody I felt that way about. So I took the hit. And that's what you need to understand. A lot of times, yes, in a smaller company, maybe they care about you to a degree. But when it really comes down to it, and if I don't get rid of you, I might lose my company. You're gone. Or you pissed off a customer who's our oldest and best customer that counts for 50% of our revenue, you're gone. I don't care how much I like you. I might even give you a good letter of recommendation, which that and $5 you can get a shitty coffee at Starbucks. But you'll go. And so the other side of that is when you can drastically improve your life by moving, move. Move. Be just as loyal to them as they are to you, and they're not. Especially if your company trades on a stock exchange, they're not loyal to you. Don't even think they are. Beware of calling it growth if it's just sideways movement, though. Like sometimes people will take a job and they call it growth, but all they did was get a bigger paycheck. They went from company A to company B and their income went up. There's nothing wrong with that. Just don't deceive yourself. Unless you really are adding to, or maybe it's not even that the job itself natively has opportunities to learn. Does it have more freedom to learn? Sometimes when you move to a different company, there's less guardrails around your personal development within the company. Meaning, if you want to try something, you can, even if you're not, it's not in your job description. Where if you did it at the other place, it would actually be a negative that you did more and extra work, right? And then class four. Class four is, I call it the unicorn job. I have one. Right now I'm doing it. I love this. Would I do 4 shows a week if somebody wrote me a check for $20 million? I don't think I would, to be honest. But I'd probably do 2 or 3 a week. Still, I would do everything I'm doing now, just maybe less of it. I would worry less. Maybe I'd take off Fridays and Mondays instead of just Fridays at this point in my life. But I love what I do. I love teaching, and that's what this job is more than anything else is teaching. I love giving back. And I love the reward beyond the money when people send me an email and tell me about the business they built, the disaster they averted, the garden they planted, the improved relationships with their kids and their wife, whatever it is. Those are my biggest. As long as the money's good, then that's the real payday. Now, if the money's not there, that changes everything. So if I wrote you a check for $20 million, so this is your check, do whatever you want with it. Free and clear. You can live the rest of your life on 20. I promise you, all of you could very, very well and never worry about money again. What would you do with your time? Beyond I'd take a vacation, beyond I would party, beyond I would play my boss's head like a bongo on the way out the door, whatever it is. Like, once you got through, like, what would you do now? What is your dream occupation? And this is hard. Right? It has to be something you love and you're great at. That already pushes you toward class four. If you love it and you're great at it, right? And I mean, you really love it. It's rare in jobs. It's rare. Most people that have it have to do what I did. You have to create your own opportunity. Like, what I really do is teach. That's what I've wanted to be a teacher since I would say after I got out of the Army, I realized like teaching, I even considered going to college, getting a degree in education and becoming like Mr. Spirico, the cool history teacher. But when I looked at it, I'm like, there is no fortune to be made in this. I will never be wealthy. All my teachers in high school always told me how important school was and how broke they were, one level or another. Like, they made, and they were solid class two income, right? For where I grew up, having a job teaching at a high school, you could have a house, you could have a car, you could have a social life, 3 months a year off. It was the comfort trap. And I could see it. I couldn't even describe it the way I can describe it now, but I could see it. And I knew that's not what I wanted. I would rather be packing boxes in a warehouse like I started out, knowing I was going somewhere way better than that, than pursuing a degree in education and teaching ungrateful children in a high school. And I thought about also the fact that I really, like, there were things I liked about school, but overall I hated it. It was a waste of my time. So now I'm going to be in a place that I already, no, it doesn't work, but I still wanted to teach. I had to create a teaching gig. So at that point I started thinking, but would it be different since I never went to college? If I taught in college, I started talking to people who were in college, who went to college. And I went, no, it's actually going to be the same, just more kids, less personal, and more bullshit. So I don't want to do this, but I still wanted to teach. So how do you get a job that doesn't exist? You create it. Sometimes you can create it inside a company, but it's very rare. When it exists in a company, it's very hard for the employee and the employer to really find each other. If you find it, this is usually what's happened. You have a person that's a lot like I am, except they don't want the risk of running a company. They don't mind the extra hours. They don't mind the extra workload, et cetera, but they actually do want a stop point, right? Like, maybe they don't want the bell to ring at 5 o'clock and they're out the door and they don't talk to you until, you know, 8 a.m. Monday. Maybe it's not that bad, but they do want some level of that in their life. They want some level of guaranteed paycheck. They don't want all the weight of it, but they could do it. Usually this person that has this job could run the company that they work for, but doesn't want the stress of running the company they work for. They'll take the stress of being the number two, but they don't want to be the number one. And you know when you found this person, now whether or not they actually see the job the same way is different, but when you have the person and you think, if I had a cloning machine and I put this motherfucker in this cloning machine and I made four of him, I would turn my company over, let them run it as a four-man consortium, and I would go to the beach and I would never worry about my company again. When you want to clone an employee, and it's not because they pack the box the best, when you want to clone the employee and they could run your company, but they don't want to, you found that guy for you. But he has to find the job that he feels that way about, and he has to know that's what he – and I've known two fellow business people who have that guy in their company. Two. I'm in my 50s. In all my years being on, like, Chamber of Commerce – technology business councils, I've met two people that say, I have the guy. I have the guy. And when you talk to the guy, you're like, he really is the guy. Two. In what, 35 years of professional experience? Two. And this will never exist in a government job, right? Unless, I mean, everything's possible. Like, I know people that work for NRCS, they drive around and talk to farmers for a living, and they're happy with it. Their growth is finitely limited, but they're paid well. They have federal benefits. They're happy, right? So you can create this for yourself, but it requires very much an outside-the-box thinking. And a lot of times people think they can do it, and they can't. Like, I love hunting, so I'm going to be a game warden. You're going to hate being a game warden. You're going to work when you want to hunt. You know? I like being out and talking to people. Hunters are usually pretty easy to get along with. Game wardens that aren't assholes are generally well received by hunters. Like, the guy that's not like, clearly you were a hall monitor, like, and clearly you're just out to like be a dick to people. Like, no. But like, decent game wardens, usually hunters and game wardens get along just fine. They have to. Everybody has a gun. But that's a very small number of people who would see this that way. Most people that have that job definitely don't see it that way. And then you get to see all the other shit that guy has to do, all the paperwork and crap and bullshit. So this is, again, it's a unicorn, and it almost always has to be created yourself. And if you're not creating it yourself completely, you have to create it somehow. You have to build a cocoon inside the entity you work for, right? it needs to fund your life too, by the way. Or it's just a hobby. Like, I see people say that about their job, but they bitch about money all the time. Then you don't have this job. Then what you actually have is a class one job that's not a shit job. Like, you literally only have that job for money. It just turns out that it's something you don't mind doing, but it pays such a shitty wage that you can't even, like, healthily pay your bills. If you don't have a job where at the end of every month there's extra money to invest in your future and all your bills are paid and you're not stressed out about money, you do not have a class four job. You have something of a mix in between. Let's talk about the overlap. But I want to actually say a little bit more about this before we move on. Don't skip shit work and survival work in your life because this is what you want. Because most people that get here had shit survival work in their life at some point first. And don't skip it even if you already have a class two with that side hustle. It is always the little things that you learn that improve what and who you're all about. Sometimes shit work is kind of like Mr. Miyagi and Daniel-san, right? A wax on, wax off. You don't even know what you're learning while you're learning it. You don't even, but what you're really learning maybe is the back end of a business. Because you have visibility that somebody, now, maybe you learn all of that in 2 or 3 weeks. But you can do the job for 2 or 3 weeks and get paid to learn it. And go do something else. When people hire people that like are working part-time while they're working full-time, they know it's a short term. You know, you want to probably give that job, if you want to ever use them as any kind of a reference, at least 60 days, right? And there's a beautiful way out of those jobs. Look, I actually like working for you, Bill. I really do. But I'm at a point where I'm putting in 110 hours a week and I have to work somewhere full time. If you have a full time job for me better than the one that I have, I'll go with you. But if not, I'm going to have to say I appreciate the opportunity, but I'm done. Always a classy way to walk away because you offered to stay with them and you know what they're going to say. I don't have anything, man. It's been great, Bill. Thanks. I'll give you another 2 weeks if you need it. That's what I can do. Is that okay? Or do you want me to do, what do you want? What do you need me to do for you? Right. Yeah. And if I come across anybody looking for a job, I'm happy to recommend, like, be as nice as you can when you walk away. Never play your, that's a Homer Simpson thing, by the way, right? Never play your boss's head like a bongo on the way out the door, right? Someday you may have to crawl back in the replicant, not the applicant door. Now here's when they cross over. First, like we were just talking about, you can hold multiple types of jobs at once. You got a day job and a side hustle. And the side hustle may be a business, or it may be a side hustle job, or it may be a hybrid. Like if you drive Uber or Lyft, or you do Uber Eats or something like that, DoorDash, what have you, it's not a business. Now, for the IRS purposes, it opens up a lot of business deductions, but it's really not a business of your own, right? It's a contract job. So it's a side hustle, but it's still a job. But it's a great fucking job. Do you know who takes Uber and Lyft? Me. Do you know what I would be doing? If I were you and I was sitting in a car with me, I would be milking this motherfucker for all the information I can get about opportunity in the world. You know who takes Uber and Lyft? Everybody. But you know who's really likely to take like an Uber Black? You know, during the week? Business people. Business people work for companies. Companies have jobs. Companies have opportunities. It's amazing what you learn when you talk to lots of people every week. I knew a guy started a business as a side hustle detailing cars. You know who has their car detailed? Some people that probably shouldn't spend their money that way, but mostly it's people that have money. People that have money work for companies. Those companies hire people. Why are you – that you did a great job on my car. Yeah, thanks, man. And then you have the conversation. Like, you're doing it as a business, right? Yeah, I'm just doing this to earn some extra money in the interim. I'm really looking to whatever it is you're looking to do. And you would get a lot of people in that situation be like, you know what? My company's looking for people. Or I know a guy that works for a company that's looking for people. Why? Because you're in motion. When I first got to Texas, nothing to do with job, but this is a good metaphor to understand things. True story. My car broke down on LBJ at rush hour in the third lane, no shoulder on the left. So you got to go across two lanes of traffic, slightly uphill. Fortunately, it was a little Mustang too, so it didn't weigh much. I'm pushing a car. I have the door open and I'm in it so I can steer, and I'm pushing a car across the fucking highway, and assholes are blowing the horn at me. But what happens almost immediately? Some redneck in a big old truck with a push bar on the front of it pulls up and goes, "Get in, I'll push you." And he pushed me over to the side of the road. Do you know why he pushed me to the side? You know why he stopped? Why he risked? It's a risk. It's dangerous. There's traffic everywhere. LBJ sucks, right? Why did he do that? Because I was trying. Because I wasn't sitting there going, "I don't know what to do."
Why didn't you call somebody with a cell phone, dumbass?
Because there were no fucking cell phones yet. That's why. It would have been 1993. There were some cell phones. They were in big bags, and only rich people had them. If you had a cell phone back then, you weren't driving a Mustang too, bro. Trust me. You might have one of them plastic ones from Walmart to be a poser, but you didn't have a cell phone. This, and I am telling you that every time I have really been trying is when help just shows up. And it's because when people see you trying, they want to help you. So when you see a guy Uber and Lyft or DoorDash, and he says, "I'm doing this because I need money right now, but I am trying to forward my life," and you have a conversation with him, you're looking to help that person. Is everybody going to try to help you? No. But if you talk to 50 people a week that you otherwise wouldn't talk to because you have a class one job that gets you out there doing it, if one in 50 try to help you, that's four people a month trying to help you. You're going to find somebody that's really going to help you within a couple of months. Now, do not expect it to be easy and fast. I'm just saying, if you keep doing it, it happens, right? Jobs can also shift over time. They really can. Most jobs I've taken, they're at any level of professional level. They were never a class two job on day one. Because it's a new job, new company, lots of stuff to learn, right? Even if you came well equipped into the job, there's a new procedure, there's a new boss, there's new underlings, there's a new operations manual, there's a new customer base, the product set. There's so many things to learn. But if you're a quick student, a lot of those jobs in 6 months, they go from class three to class two. I've now learned what I can learn. And I'm going to tell you how you accelerate that is you work harder, you do more, you show up first, you leave late. You're always that person. Every time there's an opportunity, you stick your hand up willing to do it. And when there is no opportunity, you create one. You do something like the spreadsheet self-evaluation. You develop a marketing initiative for the company, even if you're not in marketing. You develop a program and you walk to whoever is most suited to do something with it and you hand it to them. You go, "Here you go, Bill. I was thinking about a way that we could get more demos done of our test equipment, and this is what I came up with." And Bill's going to do something with it or not do something. "Bill will take credit for my idea." Shut up. You want to be poor for the rest of your fucking life, you doorknob. Of course Bill's going to take credit for it because he can do something with it and you fucking can't. All right? And maybe he will give you some credit, and maybe he won't. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This shit where everybody, but my boss took credit for what I do because he's fucking paid to do that. Because you work for fucking him and he is held accountable for you both when you are good and when you are bad. Number one way to stay employed, by the way, really simple rule. Do not let your boss's boss tell him about you in a negative way. Let's say your name's Steve and you work for Bill and Bill works for Tom. When Tom comes to Bill and says Steve did something bad, Steve's in shit, right? If you never hear Steve's name, he's good. Your boss is good if he never hears your name. If he only hears your name once in a while, it's always for good things, you're good. If your boss, his boss comes to him with your name in his mouth more than once in a negative, you got problems, right? But that's playing it safe. That's playing it safe. Okay? You want to advance, you have to take risks. And risk means you do work you do not get paid for, and you put it into the hands of somebody who can do something with it. And even when they don't do anything with it, eventually that person may be moving up in the company. And a company, I know you don't think they do, but it's often because there's nobody there that has demonstrated the willingness to do the extra work before it's required. That's why they go outside and hire somebody from outside. I've never been promoted without being asked, do you know someone who would be good taking your position? And the person you feel like, he just stole my ideas. He's the guy that turns around and goes, you know, Tori, the mom over in, you know, customer service, man, she works her ass off. She's been great. She's given me some good ideas that I had to modify and all, but I've implemented them. And you might want to talk to her about the job. That shit happens, but only to the people that do the extra work. And again, if it doesn't happen, then when you go interview the next job, what did you do? I did this and I did this. Especially if the guy you gave it to took it and did it, claim credit for it. They're not going to know. And watch this. Can we talk to your current employer? Well, I can understand why you'd like to. You can contact my employer that I had before my current employer. And if there's anything you're really questionable about, you can give me an offer contingent upon verifying it. But no, you cannot talk to my current employer right now, because then they'll know I'm looking for a job. And they might fire me. And I don't know if you're going to hire me. And I don't know yet if I want to work for you, because we're still early in the interview process. I haven't decided if I want to work for you, and you haven't decided if you want me to work for you. So I really don't want to ruin what I have, because it's important to me that I maintain my employment. Simple, easy. Anybody that doesn't like that answer, you don't want to fucking work for them, because they're being unreasonable out of the gate. Absolutely. I have checked references on people, and I have checked in prior employment. I have never once wanted to contact somebody's current employer, because I know it's a dick move. It's an absolute dick move. Sometimes you have to drop back to reset and refocus and make money in contact. Sometimes you will have to go truly backwards, not just in pay, but in like your status. When I took the marketing job, I did have people work for me, but I was also not really considered that important by the company at all. I went from real status. Like if I called somebody in the company that didn't work for me and said I wanted something done, they're like, if I piss him off, it could go bad for me. When I went to work for that agency, no one gave a fuck that Jack was upset about something. That's a move backwards too. Like it's not just money. It's also status and the ability to get things done. Right. The only reason I was willing to take that job was to learn from it. And because I also talked them into, oh, but you said I'm a good salesperson. So if I close a deal for you, I want a commission. So I had a riff of a commission on top of that. Right. But yeah, you sometimes will have to go backwards, really. Sometimes it's just because you need money. So you lost a job, you're delivering pizzas or whatever because you have to, right? Because you need money in the interim. And you also don't want to be looking for a job without having a job for very long, you know? And you need contacts. The contacts are the most important thing about taking any job you can get. You know, a retail job, how many people are you going to talk to in a retail job? A lot if it's a busy location. And I would rather work for a retail store that's busy, that services upper income people than lower income people, even if they pay the same, because the connections are better, right? Look at the value of the network that you're plugging into when you take a job. And recognize your job type honestly. Don't delude yourself into thinking you're in a 3 job when you're in a 2, or a 2A when you're in a 2C. Like, you must determine where you are and be completely honest about it. And then if you decide, like, but I looked at all the things I have to do to move beyond this, and it isn't that I don't want to move beyond this. I don't want to do the work. This is just not what I want to do. I want to enjoy what I have. Then you need to develop the ability to enjoy the job that you have. And it's actually a really easy thing. Write down everything you like about your job. Oh, I like anything. I bet you're wrong, or you would have quit already. You would have found some other shit work to do. Write down everything you like about your job. And every time you come up with something new, like when you have a good day, what made today a good day? Write that down, add it to the list. Every day in the morning and every day after work, read the list. That's how you teach yourself to like a job. I've had people do this and they come back and you're like, I don't know what's going on, man. I've had people that heard me say this on the air before. I thought you were full of shit. And I'm like, but you know what? If I'm going to say he's full of shit, I need to prove he's full of shit. So I did it. I did it for 90 days. And I don't know what's going on. I had one guy write me an email. I don't know what's going on. You wouldn't believe the way the people at work changed. They're so much more friendly and helpful than they used to be. Like, the whole attitude of the whole workplace changed. Bro. No, your whole... No, like, you work for a company with 60 people in it, and 59 of them changed, and you were the same. Yeah, did someone, a new boss take over? Did they change? No, I don't know. Like, the company really is... Everything looks the same. There's no new people. It just... Everything just is better. Your attitude changed. Now, here's the thing. Don't do that. Don't become comfortable unless you really are happy where you are. And I don't mean like you've gotten to that point. I mean, when you really back off and analyze it, figure out where you are, how you got there, what it would take to do something else, what your budget is, how much money you make, what your future earnings are likely to be. Like, in the end, you're like, you know what, financially and logistically, this job gives me the opportunity to, like, be home on time so I see my kids after school. That's important. And the sacrifice you would do maybe to move up would mean, like, when I traveled, I got to see my kid after school on Friday when I got home at 7 o'clock at night. He'd already been off for several hours, and he was off with his friends. That was hard. But I wanted the career advancement, and maybe you don't. And neither one of us is wrong. You have to find the balance in your life, right? You have to figure that out. But you have to know where you are and not delude yourself to being, to believing you're above where you are for yourself, not for income, not for job type, not for prestige. What do you really want in your life? And do you have that? And can you make what you have that? You have a golden opportunity if that's the case. And maybe the other side of it would be, maybe you realize I only really need to move up one more level. Then everything in your life should move toward that one level. Be sure of it, though. Run the numbers. Don't just say, you know what, if I made an extra $20,000 a year, everything would be okay. It won't. Unless you already figured out the budget and what that looks like. And accounted for inflation, etc. Yeah? You know, and maybe the job is like, but I hate where I live. Then you have to find employment where you want to be, and you have to be sure about where you want to be because a move's a big deal. Trust me, I know. I've done it in the past. Final thoughts and advice. Again, there's no shame in any of them if you use them right. There is no shame in cleaning toilets. None. None. In fact, there's a lot of people who claim they can't find a good job that if they'd go clean some toilets within a year, they'd find a good job. I know that sounds fucking crazy, but I've got this young, entitled Gen Z asshole in front of me. Maybe you're not, but I'm a boomer hiring somebody. That's what I see. What are you doing right now, son? What kind of job do you have? Well, since I got out of college, this is an entry-level job. I'm looking for an entry-level job. I have not been able to find one. I need the opportunity. I work hard. You know, I'll show up on time, blah, 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 blah. All I see is spoiled kid. I might be wrong. I wouldn't see you that way, but most people like me would. That's what I'm telling you. Right now, I'm working for a hotel chain. I clean rooms. That's usually what some lady from El Salvador does, right? Like, you're a young kid with a degree, and that's what you do. And it doesn't have to be that. That's not my point. I'm working for a landscape company. I'm mowing lawns. I'm washing dishes at a restaurant. Anything like that. You know what I just said? This freaking kid's not afraid to work. This person's not afraid to roll their sleeves up. They're not afraid to do extra. Your entire perception changes. I ain't doing that. I have a degree from Columbia. And what are you doing with it? Right? And what are you doing with it? No one will hire me. It's not fair. Wham, fucking cry harder. I just gave you a solution and you rejected it because you think you're too fucking good for it. You're not. You're not. You are not too good for it. If Jack Spirico can scrub turkey guts out of a concrete chute when he's 16, you can do some sort of a maintenance job in your 20s for your first job when you got out of college because you were too stupid to get a job the entire time you were in school. And you have no experience and no resume except your degree, which makes you overqualified and underqualified at the same time. You think the employer is also thinking this person's going to want more than they're worth because I have to teach them everything because they think they know what they don't know. But when I have somebody like this guy will go out and work on lawnmower engines because he could get a job doing that. This guy is working framing houses because he could get a job doing that. This girl is working at a grocery store, ringing up groceries because that's the job she could get until she could find a better job. All of those make me think this person is not afraid of work. This person's not afraid of work. Never settle. Always be designing. So when I say never settle, I just said don't shy away from the shit work if that's what you need to do, but know why you're doing it and know what the end goal is. Always be thinking, what can I add? What can I piece together? What can I do? And you're going to have failures. You're going to think I'm going to get a second job and no one's going to want to give you one. And you're going to be like, Jack's an asshole. He's wrong. You just have to keep trying. There will be setbacks. There will be pain. You know, I talk about keto and carnivore. I always say, like, beware of keto flu. It's a thing. About half the people that do it the first couple of weeks feel like dog shit. You're giving up an addiction to carbohydrates. You'll get better. And whenever I have it, it's not the case anymore. But in the beginning, when Dorothy and I did it together, it worked so well. And we would be talking to a friend, like a in real life friend about it. And I would tell them the negative. She would be kicking me under the table. Don't tell them that. Because she wanted them to try. The difference was I also wanted them to try, but I didn't want them to quit when it got hard. You have to prepare people for pain if pain is part of a process, or as soon as they run into pain, they'll think, but he said it was easy and it hurts me, so it must not be right for me. No, this shit hurts. And what happens is you get to a point like I'm at in life, people say, well, it's easy for you. Don't you want it to be fucking easy for you someday? If it was hard for me, would you listen to what I had to say? Do you realize that if you take this path, you're going to have, they're going to think, I'm going here, and you're going to course correct along the way and figure out you never really wanted to be there. You're going to end up some, but you're going to end up some point where you're going to be like, I got this. It is easy now. And it won't be easy, but it will be so easy compared to how hard it used to be that it seems easy. And people look at it and go, fucker's got the Midas touch. You just touch his shit, it turns to gold. That's not how it works. But this is the simple reality. You get better at things that you do frequently. So you can get better at shit that doesn't advance your life, or you can get better at things that do. It's up to you how you spend your time. I talk about people playing video games, and I understand when I do that, it's a placeholder for all wasteful activities. I know there are people out there that say something like this, look, man, I just like gaming, and I play for like an hour a night, and I have a time limit, and I turn it off, and it's just something I do to blow off steam. And for every person that says it and means it, there's 100 guys that say it, and it's bullshit. And it could be anything. I have a person in my family. She's a shopper, but she shops for cheap shit, like Five Below shit, right? But in the end, spends a ton of money every month in tiny little parts. It's her hobby. And then complains about money. How about you get a hobby that even makes a little money versus a hobby that expends money? That would be the first step to go in the right direction. Until you're willing to do those things, you're not designing. You're settling for what you have, and you're thinking, but one day it'll get better. But you're not doing anything to make it get better. You're expecting that someday they're just going to walk into you at work and go, hey, man, we're giving you the corner office. They're not. The person that's not designing never gets that promotion. I'm sorry, you don't. And you're probably going to have to move over to get that promotion. I'm telling you, the career path I took into my 30s before I broke off and did this and made my unicorn job, right, would have took me twice as long if I used the stay where you are, keep working. Because if I did that, I was doing enough extra that I still would have advanced, but I would not have been a regional sales vice president by the time I was in my mid to late 20s. That would not have happened. I wouldn't have been making six figures by the time I was 24 if I had followed the sage career advice that worked for your grandpa. Those days are over. You have to be designing. Take any job that gets you closer to what you want, no matter how it does it. A new skill, more money, right? More content. I don't care how it does it. Because sometimes it's not going to do anything for you, right? Like, you know, one thing my kid did for a while, he cleaned pools, right? He had a little side hustle business cleaning pools, just made him extra money. That's all it was. He was never going to build it into a real business. He could have, but he was never going to do it. And it wasn't great work. And, you know, you meet people that own pools and all, but he wasn't a networker, so that wasn't going to do anything for him. He just needed more money in the interim, so he did that. And, he put an extra $300 a week in his pocket. Nothing wrong with that. Learned about mileage deductions. Reduced his tax footprint. Technically lost money, which you can do in your first beer. No problem with the business. So it was like free money. Not free money as in no work, but free money. And as you got to keep it all, the government got none of it. Because when you knock off your income, you don't even pay Social Security on it when it's a business. Right? When you run a business, your Social Security and matching are paid on your profit, not your revenue. Not your revenue. Changes everything. Quit crying about not being promoted. I hear people all the time, I've been with this company, they just won't promote me. Did you need to move over or you need to give them a reason to promote you? I'll tell you how you don't get promoted. Bill, if you don't promote me, I'm leaving. Bill, hey, Karen, get an HR packet ready for Tom because he's leaving. That's how that goes. Now, you do something like I said. Develop metrics for yourself and for your, if you can, if there's some way you can do it, like if there's some information that is available but nobody's aggregating it, like one of the companies we worked in, we had recruiters, and when they would make a deal, they wrote it on a board, and that's all they did with it. Well, any one of those recruiters who wanted to be a manager could have aggregated that data and brought it to me. And said, look, I'm the top performing recruiter throughout the last 4 months. And here's the things I'm doing to advance. And this is the kind of oversight I would provide as a manager. And if I don't have a manager's position for them, they're not getting it then. But they just went to the top of the fucking list because they did something. You live in a place where most people don't do anything except what they're paid to do. So all you have to do is do more than you're paid to do. Document it and make it clear to others that you've done it. And don't ask for anything initially. Take it to your, hey, Bill, I know that, you know, you've done some reviews with us and all, but I thought that it would be helpful if you had more information. So I put this list of metrics together. And if you need any help interpreting them, let me know. But here, I want a raise because my close rate went up. My time on the phone went down, you know, per call, whatever it is, whatever metric. Like, I've improved by 45% in the last 90 days. And here's proof to the point. And if you don't have visibility into others, don't worry, because what others did is not the important thing. If you're giving them that, you're giving it to them as a tool so that they can evaluate things for themselves, right? Or to demonstrate that you would be a good manager. But when you do it just for yourself, what you're saying is, look, I care enough about what I do to judge my own performance. They already know that you're doing it. They don't know that you know you're doing it. Every employee thinks they work harder than they do. Every employee thinks they're more valuable than they are. This is when you, once you get into a management role, you know this, right? Everybody thinks they're the best worker out there. But when the person actually documents the rate of improvement, if I value you, you know what I'm thinking? This motherfucker's going to leave. I'm going to lose this guy if I don't do something to keep him. I'm going to do something to keep you, assuming I want to keep you. Because the people that you're working next to, you probably are better than them if you take that approach. Because you know who doesn't take that approach? People that know it's not going to look well when they do it. I'm not going to keep my own metrics. They should be doing that, and they should be just rewarding me. But that, you just admitted that your metrics will be shit. And again, it's not necessarily that. It's, I don't know your job. I don't know where you work. I don't know what you're judged on. I don't know what opportunities are there. You have to find them and do something with them. Build a life, though, not a resume. That's my final piece for you today. Your goal should not be, you know, I want to be X level of management, or I want to be a partner in the firm, or I want to be, you know, making at least $200,000 a year by, or whatever. Like, those are fine overall goals, you know, or I want to have backgrounds in at least these five different disciplines or whatever. What do you really want? What do you really want? You know what I didn't want to do? Go drive on the fucking highway anymore. I didn't want to go to board meetings anymore. I don't have to kiss the ass of people that I don't even want to talk to anymore. Because that's a lot of what I did in my past. I had a lot of fun with it. But, you know, you, like, when I was in sales and you're setting up these dinners and you've got like an architect and a contractor and a distributor and you put them all at this table and you get them all talking to each other and you're able to get some work done while you're there. And, you know, then you have an inside track on the next bid and then you make a bunch of money. Like, it's, there's worse ways to make money than sitting at a great New York City restaurant and eating awesome food. But when the people around the table, like half of them, you literally wouldn't talk to if you didn't have the job. You just don't even want anything to do with them. You're kind of a corporate whore to a little bit anyway, because you're giving your social time to people you don't want to talk to. Right? That's not a life. That's a stepstone to a life, maybe, but it's not a life. And the big thing is to know, what do I want? Where am I? And what does the road between those two locations look like? How do I get there? Again, I drop you in Kansas somewhere. I give you a map. You're supposed to get to Dallas. First thing you have to figure out is, where are you? If you have enough resources to get to Dallas, once you know where you are, it's a straight shot to do it. It's not hard anymore. Most people will never do this work. Most people will never take the time to map out where I am, how I got there, where I want to be, and what it will take to get there. Because they're scared of the result. Because the result is often, I could do this, but I don't want to. I'm going to tell you, there's been quite a few things in my life that I thought, I would like to do this. And when I looked at the sacrifice to get it, I don't want that anymore. For me, it was more about spending money, like buying a thing. Like, I want this. I want a brand new Corvette. How much are those fucking things? I want a used one. What comes with that? You know what? I'm happy with my truck. I know I'll buy a Challenger for cash. And then I won't ever have to put any work into it. And I'll buy it in the middle of a pandemic, so I pay less than the dealer did for it. Okay. That was my compromise. Right. And that was the things I was like, would I like to have a Lamborghini? Sure. Am I willing to do what it takes? Am I willing to give up what it takes to have one? No. A lot of people, it's like that in their careers. They want to dream about being the big boss someday, but they don't really want to do it. That's fucking okay. The unicorn job, class 4, is more doable than it's ever been done, than it's ever been to do before. More people are doing it than have ever done it before. No time in history was there as much opportunity to create a unicorn job. I didn't say it was easy. I just said it's there if you want it. So ask yourself, what is your class of job right now? I'd like to see that. If you guys that are online right now listening to us live, there's quite a few of you, even if you're in another tab, or just jump over to the chat for just a second and just drop in. Just put class 1, 2, 3, or 4. And describe what you would consider the way you earn a living right now. Is it a class 1, is it a class 2, class 3, class 4? Drop that in for me and we'll hit it. I didn't have any questions come in that I saw anyway. I do want to get wrapped up. Tori, the mom, says she's got a class 3 job. I'll come back and read these off in a minute. Let me go ahead and real quick tell you about today's item of the day. Something I haven't brought around in a long time. And the buddy that's coming over tonight is actually the guy that introduced me to him. That's J.R. Haley, who used to be on the Expert Council. Many of you know J.R., especially if you've been to workshops, because he's like my number one helper guy at workshops. He usually comes in on the weekend before. Well, he's going to be here tonight because he travels with his work, and we're going to be having dinner tonight and all. He gave me a set of these a couple of years ago, the Knipex Cobra Pliers. I have retired channel locks. They don't exist in my world anymore. Or the knockoff channel locks, whatever. These are so much better. In the video, or the picture you see on the screen there, if you're watching the video, there's a shoe standing on that plug. You can actually lock these things onto a pipe, and a grown-ass man can step on them, and they'll hold. But they don't lock like a vice grip. They are just pliers. The Cobra is about the teeth. The teeth are recessed like a snake, more like a colubrid than a cobra, honestly. But they bite into the material. They adjust easily. It's a button they slide open and close. In fact, I have the smallest pair they make right here. Let me show them to you for those of you again on the video. This is the smallest set they make right here. And when I say they slide, what I mean is they slide, like, see how they slide? So once they slide to where they are, they're locked in at that size. And even this tiny-ass little ones here, that'll get around a full-size garden hose. When you have the garden hose, it's time to take off. So I keep this in my little EDC kit right here all the time. And when I need to move a hose or something or anything, I need to get a grip on. Even these little-ass ones. And they make great big ones, all different sizes in between. And some of them are on sale right now. Some of them are marked down on sale, and some of them the price is just lower than it usually is. But check these out again. Knipex, the best freaking tools I've ever used come from these people. I've even started buying some of their other tools like screwdrivers and ratchets and stuff like that. But the Cobra pliers, my God, these things are awesome. Let's see if we have not a lot of people telling me. Tori said class 3. Humble Mechanics said plus 1,000 for Knipex. Humble has a unicorn job. Humble has, he says he's guessing 4. Yes, you do have a class 4 job, Humble, like I do. You have a unicorn job because you created it for yourself. If it wasn't what you wanted, you would change it because you work for yourself. I'm retired and enjoying homesteading. Space Girl, that would be a class 4. You have enough income to have everything you want and you do what you want to do. That is a class 4. Class 4, if it's actually still income, is retired without being retired, is a way to look at it as well. Lots of nice comments here, but not a lot of people saying where they're at. Andy D, class 2, and stuck with Billy's baseball bat. I am trying to trash out of the cage, started a new side hustle, and that is growing. You know where you are, Andy, and you know what you want. That's half the battle. Now you just have to do it. 229 Mix is class 3 IT, and I just work for folks I want to help. No clients I don't like and don't feel good about helping succeed. That's like a 3A, bro. That's almost a class 4, right? Hilux Radio says, out of the park, Jack. Humble says, of my pliers, those little ones stay in the backpack and go almost everywhere I do. Andy D says, thanks for the kick in the pants. Amy B says, those pliers are the clutch. Robin says she's a class 4. Good for you. So we have a lot of class 4s. Amy B says class 3 golden handcuffs. Okay, there is that too. But sometimes a class 3 golden handcuff can become a class 4 with a little creativity, Amy. It's easier on you than creating it from the ground up. That's it. That's all I got as far as people telling me what class. I think it's interesting, though. In this audience, we got more class 4s than any other, even though it's the unicorn. And I'll tell you why. One, it's what we've taught for 17 years. But two, think about when this podcast is going out live, not whenever you might listen to it if you listen to it after the fact. Noon, Central Time, on a Monday. Of course, there's going to be a certain portion of the people that have the time to listen live on a Monday at noon Central, they have complete control over their own lives or they wouldn't be able to be listening to a podcast right now. But it's really, oh, Odyssey Camper, number 4. Tori the Mom says, that's because you're a jerk, Jack. I love being a jerk that way. And Missalon says, am I the only one around here? Bro, it's okay to be a one. Just know you're a one and know where you want to be. Just make it happen. Make it happen because you can. Again, this is actually, I went way deeper into it than it will be in the book, but I'm working on a chapter in the book right now, and this is a piece of that chapter. So I'm working really hard to get Law of Life 2 out, and I'm going to give you the law that the chapter is about that this is in. It's chapter 8. And believe it or not, the law is if you cheat, it should benefit you. And what I mean by that is a lot of people use the term, I cheated, but they didn't cheat. Like you go on a diet and you say you cheated. Well, what you did was actually you hurt your efforts by eating donuts. You didn't get ahead. So I'm wrapping that chapter up with a discussion on these different types of jobs. and how to use them to leverage them to get ahead in your life. So that's what's coming in the new book. I don't think the new book will be ready by Christmas time. I really don't, but I do expect it to be out early next year. Thanks everybody that tuned in today. We got another Eric says class three. Other Eric says class three. That's pretty cool. We got a couple more class threes. Class threes are pretty damn good jobs to have. Just remember, they can revert to class two if you stop making them class three and looking for more things to learn in them. With that, again, I'm going to wrap up. Tomorrow we'll probably do what we usually do on Mondays. We'll probably break down some current events. There's a lot of stuff going on. I had a lot of fun this weekend watching people get their ass beat and arrested for protesting in ways that weren't really protesting. When you spit on people, you're not protesting. When you block roads, you're not protesting. When you trespass on other people's property, you're not protesting. You're committing crimes and you get your ass beat. With a lot of FAFO this weekend, a lot of other things we can talk about. So maybe we'll do that tomorrow because you guys tend to like that. With that, I'll say adios. I'll catch you tomorrow with another episode. You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.